Thank you for listening to this Podcast One Sportsnet production, available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
The following program is a PodcastOne.com production.
He started in a small town in Texas. Worked his ass off to become one of the most famous wrestlers of all time.
We're going to take care of business tonight, and that's the bottom line.
And now, he's dominating the world of on-demand audio.
And he's doing it for the working man.
This is a damn good outlet for me to spew the bullshit off my brain.
Yeah!
This is the Steve Austin Show. Unleashed.
All right, everybody, welcome to Steve Austin Show. I am coming to you from the main streets of Los Angeles, California today. I'm sitting in my office at 316 Gimmick Street here in Marina Del Rey, and I forgot to make an announcement on last Tuesday's podcast concerning Broken Skull IPA, the best beer in the United States of America, a launch event in Philly, the city of brotherly love, Philadelphia, at the Tattooed Mom on May 5th. There's going to be an event at the Tattooed Mom 5-5 there in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Broken Skull IPA has landed in Philadelphia. I was supposed to talk about this on the Tuesday podcast, but I lost all my notes, forgot, been hitting the head with too many steel chairs. So this show drops on Thursday. You people in Philly or in the Philly area, if you listen to this show Wednesday evening or Friday morning, that event will take place on 5-5 at the Tattooed Mom. I don't even know what the time is, but just look up the Tattooed Mom on Facebook or on the internet or whatever. Find out more about the event. It's on South Street in Philadelphia. Broken Skull IPA has landed in your neck of the woods. If you want to get a chance to sample some of the best IPA in the United States of America, here's your chance. If you're down in that Philly area, to do so, and that's what I got, and that's my news for you today. Hey, I tell you what, I'm sitting here at 316 Gimmick Street, got my wing in a sling, and I'll cover this later on in the podcast, but I'll go ahead and cover it here too. I'm healing up from a shoulder surgery. It was a very extensive shoulder surgery, and there was an announcement on WWE.com about Mick Foley hosting a podcast and a tell-all conversation with Shane McMahon. And the reason I won't be doing that podcast is because my wing, it was a very extensive surgery, reattached the bicep. I'll go through all the procedures here later on the body of the podcast. But I wish Mick Foley all the luck in the world. He happens to be a great friend of mine, as does Shane McMahon. So there's no animosity, no heat there between any of the parties involved. It's just a fact of me trying to get my wing straight so I can get on about my business and get back to work. It looks like unofficial word on the street, I believe Broken Skull Challenge is going to get green-lighted once again because you guys supported it and because it is the best show on television. It is absolutely the toughest show on television. So I'm trying to get all my healing faculties in line, trying to take care of this wing. I'm in a sling for another 4 weeks. I will start range of motion exercises in 3 weeks. The doctor was real happy with the repairs he made and total reattachment of the bicep. And I'll go over the conversation that I'm going to have with Ted Fowler. We sit here in the front part of this podcast and shoot the breeze. And then we break down the movie starring Leonardo DiCaprio, The Revenant, on the back half of the show. Now, dig this. You guys know, for the most part, if you listen to the show at all or have in the past, my Thursday show, I usually record right here in my office, right here in my yard at 316 Gimmick Street. And the good news is I don't have to go anywhere to record my podcast. The bad news is that's when my lawn guys come and take care of my yard. So if you hear during the middle of this podcast, me and Teddy are breaking down The Revenant. What happens is the guy comes in with his blower blazing. I'm going to buy this motherfucker an electric blower. But it was so goddamn loud, I tried to pick up both of my computers because I'm running Skype through one of my computers, and Teddy's on Skype now. You'll hear that story. Teddy making a goddamn technology fucking run here. Teddy's on Skype, so I've got my other laptop computer with notes from The Revenant that I took down, and so I can barely pick up any weight with my right bicep. If I do, it'll rip the bicep repair, and I don't want that. So I'm trying to pick up two computers, a Blue Yeti mic, all my cords, and move from my office into the bedroom. As I'm moving into the bedroom, I hit the mouse pad and end the conversation with me and Ted mid-sentence. So if you hear a little bit of discombobulation in the middle of the podcast where me and Ted are talking about The Revenant and we have to pick it up, I told Stacy to do the best job she could patching this thing back together, but that was an error on my part, trying to work with one bad wing and one good wing to move away from the fucking loudest blowers on God's green earth into the other bedroom so I could try to record in a little bit more quiet and privacy, so that someday, somehow, this award-winning podcast that ain't never won a motherfucking thing might actually win something if we talk about something of substance and some quality control, like some NPR radio quality shit. Oh, fuck that. I'm just kidding you. It is what it is. The damn show's for free. I appreciate you people listening to it, and I appreciate the fact that you support my sponsors, because those are motherfuckers that keep this goddamn show on air anyway. But anyway, hey, man, enough of me flapping my gums. Check this out. I got my stitches out the other day. The doctor said wait 3 days for those little holes where the threads came out of close up before you go back to doing any exercising. And when he says exercise, that means basically all I can do is just a little bit of cardio. But he wanted those holes to close up because we've got no infection going on in there. Holes close up, so tomorrow I can start doing cardio, which is a good thing because I've been drinking beer and eating about anything I wanted while I was going through this process, the waiting process to get back in action. It'll be very limited action, but now I can start burning some calories and get this drum off of me and get back into shape and get ready to get back in business. And then once I get a little bit more solid, we'll start traveling and start doing some more Stone Cold podcasts with WWE. But that's what's going on there. I'm doing real good today. I hope you're doing good. And let's take care of some business so we can launch into today's conversation. A little bit of entertainment on the front end. Me and Teddy shooting the shit. And then we're going to break down The Revenant, working man style. That's what we got for you today. But I've barely gotten started on today's podcast, but I know if you're wondering why I sound so sharp and so focused, why today's can of audio whoop-ass is especially explosive, it's because I took a couple of Alpha Brain and a few squeezes of coffee before I sat down behind a damn mic. And y'all know by now what Alpha Brain does for me and this illustrious award-winning podcast. I ain't never won a damn thing. And if you want to give your mental sharpness and clarity a boost, then get yourself some Alpha Brain at onnit.com/Steve. And if you do, you'll save 10% off your order. You can save 10% off anything you order at onnit.com/Steve. So, yes, you can get 10% off Shroom Tech Sport. Shroom Tech Sport will give your workout a boost. It helps you go longer and recover faster. And, yes, you can get 10% off T+. T+ increases strength and power. It will improve your athletic performance and is safe to use if you're competing. So go take advantage of this 10% discount off your order. Just go to onnit.com/Steve. And another great thing about Onnit and all their products is if they don't work the way they're supposed to, you can get all your money back. No questions asked. Money back guarantee. So go to onnit.com/Steve to get your 10% discount off all supplements. That's onnit.com/Steve to get 10% off your order.
Steve Austin, Unleashed.
Unleashed.
Teddy Fowler, how are you doing?
I'm doing good, Steve. How are you?
Sounds good. You're talking on Skype. It sounds like you don't have as much bounce as you did yesterday when we did our preemptive strike sound check. Did you install some foam padding? What's the story over there?
Almost, man. I got a beach towel and an Afghan pinned up with push pins up on the wall.
Dude, I did the same shit when I did my first fucking sound gimmick. You'll go from the fucking beach towel to pillows as you go through your soundproofing process, and you're looking out for some foam board?
Yeah, dude, and I just didn't. I'm so covered up with work, man. I didn't have time to do anything today. You know, and I got home, and I was like, man, I got to come up with something. And I actually tried stacking the sofa cushions up here. You know, but that's so impractical. It's like, good Lord. So I start hanging blankets and towels up over the windows, and the dogs are freaking out because, you know, I'm looking right out the window at them, and now I blocked them off, so they figure something's up. So they're barking their fool head off, and it's like, man, are you serious?
So did you get all the blankets and the pillows from the Boom Boom Room?
No. These are clean out of the linen closet. Yeah.
So the cum-infested, cum-stained ones are still in the Boom Boom Room, and you've got the nice fresh ones.
Dude, I don't want to put any push pin holes through that velveteen, you know, comforter I got.
Yeah, because that's usually the deal closer right there for you when they see that fucking velveteen gimmick.
Once you break that out, you know it's on like dog. Oh, yeah. Throw a little Old Spice up on the pillows. Yes, sir.
Well, dude, you ain't rocking Old Spice, are you?
No, man.
Hey, Jude, check us out. We're rolling. We're recording sound right now. Me and Teddy are going to shoot the shit for you, and we're going to break down a little bit of The Revenant. I got a chance to rewatch that movie. Teddy, did you finish watching The Revenant for the second time?
Yes, sir, I did. I watched it last night, finished it up.
All right, well, that's what we're going to come to. But speaking of Old Spice and stuff like that, dude, when you first started coming to the ranch about 8 years ago, you used to wear a lot of cologne, either that or a lot of hair product. Which one was it? Because if you was a chick, I'd say you smelled good. But, I mean, you're a guy, and we would become very good friends. I didn't know you very well back then, so I didn't know how to jam you up on it. Because even though we're basically rifle hunting out there and at far distances, you know, you're still trying to control a little bit of scent. And, man, I'd go to a deer stand after your ass, and I'd be like, motherfucker. I said, what is this motherfucker wearing? So, dude, back in the day, what were you wearing at the ranch?
No, dude, it was just underarm deodorant, just a gel, you know, like a right guard gel that you put under your armpits.
So you always got the scented kind. See, because what I always do when I go get my underarm deodorant, I always get the unscented clear. So don't look like I got nothing on. Don't smell like I ain't got nothing on. I just ain't got no underarm funk. Now, you never had no underarm funk, but that shit was so much. Teddy, how many fucking coats of that shit were you putting underneath your armpits?
Oh, dude, I got a couple of those things in the truck that I carry around with me. I mean, you gotta keep in mind, you know, what I do for a living. I go through, during the summertime, I go through 3 or 4 shirts, you know, because I get all sweated out. And, dude, I'm self-conscious, you know. I don't want to have any BO when I go someplace. You know, you run into some chick and it's like, damn, come walking in like pig pen, you know, with a little trail of dirt following you.
But but then also on top of that, you know, if you was to talk to a client, you smell like Fido's ass underneath your armpit. Well, that ain't cool either, because, dude, there's one thing that chaps my ass when you talk to a motherfucker. And, you know, and I've been there, dude. I work manual labor my whole entire life. But all of a sudden you get on someone and it's pure funk. You can't even concentrate on the conversation or the task at hand because the motherfucker smells so damn bad.
Oh no, dude, I got deodorant, I got breath mints, gum and stuff like that. I mean, I'm real self-conscious of that when I go, you know, to meet and greet people, or I go to the lumber yard. You know, just try to keep on top of it there. But yeah, no, dude, I remember we were riding in the Bronco and you were taking me, we were sitting together, and I think that's when we were trying to get me on Bullwinkle.
Yeah.
And you go, God damn, this is Unleashed, right?
Yeah, it's Unleashed like a motherfucker. Yeah.
You go, God damn, dude, are you going to the fucking club or what? And I'm like, I mean, you got a super sensitive nose anyway. I mean, you can't hear, but you smell like a motherfucker, you know? You know, and I'm like, God damn, I ain't wearing cologne. I just, you know, put a couple of swipes under my pits and I brushed my teeth. Shit, I didn't even run a comb through my hair. And you're like, God damn, dude, you got another shirt? And so I got to take my one shirt off, wipe my pits, throw it in the back of the truck. It's like, I'm already nervous as shit because I'm sitting with you. You know, it's like,
fuck. Well, before we really knew each other very well either, though.
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely right.
No, but I'm the same thing as you. Like, back in the day, I was rocking a Kuros or I can't remember another one that I used to wear all the time. Those are my go-tos before I met Kristen, you know, if I was still out, you know, trying to get some trim myself. And so, you know, I like to have just a little bit. And here's the thing, and I talk about this on the podcast all the time. Hey, man, just a cut hair worth of cologne, perfume, or whatever, if you think it's not enough, it probably too much. Just a con hair's worth. One little spray on your chest or wherever the fuck you want to put it. So, yeah, I used to rock that stuff back in the day. But then finally I met my wife, Kristen, 11, 12 years ago at the World Gym. And then we got together and she was no perfume, nothing. So then, okay, we became a unit. We were dating. We've been together ever since. So she didn't wear cologne or perfume. So then, you know, she kind of rubbed off on me, and so, hell, I didn't need the cologne anymore. I was kind of using that lure on top of my magnetic charm and charisma and my good looks. I didn't need to smell good, so I was using that as an attractant, as all guys and gals do. And so that's why my nose got real sensitive, just because she was scent free, I'm scent free. I just use that unscented, uncolored, clear deodorant. So that's why my nose got so fresh. And so these days, man, if a person smokes, I'll smell it. If they dip, I can tell you what they're dipping. If, you know, and still, when that person walks by on the airplane, especially that son of a bitch who's got the problem putting way too much shit on because they got issues, or they can't smell worth the flying fuck, and that just bombards my senses, my olfactory senses. So, to your point, I can't hear worth the flying fuck, but I got a pretty good nose on me. I'm not in deer territory, but that goes to the thing I was going to lead to talk to you a little bit about hunting. With my shoulder, I'm in a sling right now. I got my medical report. I'm going to read this medical report to you as we continue to shoot this shit. But you and I have been talking about going out there to Broken Skull Ranch and start doing more bow hunting, as you have in the past. I've never drawn down on an animal. I just shoot these targets in my front yard. But with I got the bad left shoulder, which I got fixed, and that's just my bow hand that I'm just sticking out straight. I can do that. But now with the recovery process on my right shoulder, I just went to the doctor yesterday, so I'm in a sling for 4 more weeks. And then in 3 weeks, I'll start range of motion exercises, and those are a bitch because your shoulder hasn't moved for 5 weeks. And so then I'll start the rehabilitation process, and my bicep tendon was so frayed, he reattached that, and he's real proud of that. He says, he's basically, I'm paraphrasing him because I got a world-class doctor, but he says, don't fuck up my work. And so I don't see myself pulling back a bow. I was thinking about taking a page this year, Teddy, out of the Shawn Michaels playbook from MRA Hunting Adventures, the show he does with Keith Mark. I'm thinking about going crossbow this year on some of the stuff where I can still get close, but going back to the bottom line of scent control and smell. And if you get dialed up, we start doing some more bow hunting. But, dude, when you start talking about getting in that territory and getting close, you know, within, for me, I want to be within 30 yards because I want to be able to get close to a deer. And I think that's pretty damn close. And I don't know how proficient I'll be, but I think with that crossbow, I'll be better. It's all about scent control.
Oh, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. I mean, you've shot a compound or a crossbow before, haven't you?
Yeah, when Sean and those guys came out, and man, those things are a blast, and they're super quiet. They're super they're super fast, and they're super accurate, and it's all about placement. But it's just, you know, and we've been talking about this forever, for 8 years damn near, about going to the bow and getting closer, but it just never happens because it's you and me out there trying to take the numbers that we got to take. And correct. So left our own devices. Fuck. And it's one thing to be able to whistle around, you know, at a coyote 350 yards down the way. That's fun. You know, he's not going to smell you, and you can take those kind of shots. On our deer hunting, we're a little bit more responsible than that, and it's more management. But to try to take a trophy deer with a crossbow or a bow, I think that would be kind of the cat's ass. So,
oh, yeah, man.
So tell me, you said you covered up with work. What the fuck's going down there, Teddy?
Oh, dude, I got another call just a minute ago to come measure half a dozen windows, you know, on a little house. Some folks from San Antonio said, hey, man, you come highly recommended by the people at Tackletown. And I'm like, well, in Rockport, that ain't that hard. You know, if you just show up, you know, you're already ahead of people. Got a framing job that, if the guy gets a permit, I'm going to start on Tuesday. The following week, got that piling repair job. That's going to be the first time I get into that, so I'm really looking forward to that. Got a phone call that 20 windows and 6 doors are in for another house. You know, so I'll be busy for a while. It's good. It's real good.
Hey, man, do you got one of those magnetic signs that you put on your truck? Because on your trailer that you carry behind you with all your tools and your shit in it, it says Ted Fowler Construction's got your phone number and all that stuff. I was thinking, because I'm always trying to think of things, and yours in the back of my mind is a marketing strategy. What if we get you a magnetic sign for each side of your pickup truck? It says Ted Fowler Construction. There's a picture of a big old giraffe, and then there's your phone number. Hello.
I need some shirts that say that. Yeah, no. You know what, man? I've got the signage on the trailer, and that's enough, you know, because I rotate trucks around depending on, you know, which one's full of debris that needs to go to the landfill. And I don't want to be, you know, I think that's cheesy, those little magnetic signs.
God damn, you ain't going to get hot about it. I'm just trying to look out for you. What if we got you? Okay, so you didn't like the giraffe idea. Okay, you're not so high on the magnetic signs. What if we get the window tint and it says Ted Fowler Construction, and then there's your phone number, and there's three big dollar signs? God damn it, Teddy, work with me. I'm trying to fucking market your business for you. You're talking to a global icon and a national treasure, and you're laughing at every fucking idea I got.
I need to show up in something besides that 95 single cab Ford F-150 that I haven't washed in about 2 years if I put all those dollar signs on it.
Well, goddamn, Teddy, going back to the scent control, and every now and then you might roll up on some a female that you might want to try to make some moves on. How's the dating department going for you?
Dude, kind of a lull right now. I haven't been doing shit, man, for a couple of weeks. I mean, I go to work, I come home, eat dinner, hit a few golf balls, work in the shop, and then drink beer.
What are you drinking? Yeah, so it's. I know you can't get Broken Skull IPA shipped out every damn week. So what's your go-to beer you drinking over there when you can't drink Broken Skull?
I'm still on the Sierra Nevada Torpedo.
It's a good beer.
What's that Lost Gold?
Dude, that's out of Real Ale Brewing coming out of Blanco, yeah. Texas. That's good beer.
Yeah, you know what? HEB had it on sale for like $7.99 a six-pack. So I bought a six-pack, and I was like, hey, man, this ain't bad. So I went back the next day, and they had three more six-packs, and I bought all of that. And they haven't stocked it back again.
Dude, that's what I was trying to turn you on to back in the day when I was drinking that shit at the ranch. I didn't think you was that high on it. But, man, it's a good go-to IPA if you can't find anything better. It's a fine beer. And, dude, since you're not too far from the Houston area, if you can get your hands on a six-pack or two of that Carbach Hopadillo, I highly recommend that. That's a goddamn good IPA.
Yeah, you'll have to text me that word.
Yeah, it's a brewery out of Houston. I'm trying to get down there and talk to those cats. It's K-A-R-B-A-C-H. It's Hopadillo. I'll text it to you.
Okay.
Teddy, yeah. Teddy, ready to talk medicine before we jump into this movie? I'll tell you what I had done to my shoulder. Because you were down there when I just had torn my infraspinatus and my supraspinatus, you know, and then I fucked it up at WrestleMania when you were there throwing those fucking punches. And I got a goddamn, I was reading some interviews that Rusev had done, you know, because I had paired off with Rusev and I hit him. Is it right in the mouth or right in the nose? I can't remember, but he started bleeding immediately. And when I threw those punches, it ripped everything out. And I had read that Rusev said he was not going to listen to or download any more Steve Austin shows due to the fact that I had attacked him. And so, God damn it, Rusev, you Bulgarian bastard. I thought you was a little bit more hardcore. I just hit you with a couple of goddamn working punches, busted your ass open, and fucking gave you a damn stunner, and now you ain't going to download the show. Now, I got two shows a week, Teddy. So, Rusev Crush, if you ain't going to listen to the goddamn show anymore just because I jumped on your ass at WrestleMania, that's going to cost me two motherfucking downloads a week. So listen, I'm going to call your ass up on the phone, and I'm going to have to eat your ass out because I need your goddamn support on the show, Rusev. You're still under the WWE fucking umbrella, as well as I am. So, Rusev, if you can hear the sound of my voice, if one of the guys in the car is listening to the Steve Austin show, hey, wipe them fucking tears out of your eyes and crank up the Steve Austin show, or I'm going to come over there, wherever you live, in fucking Bulgaria or Florida or Tampa, wherever the fuck you live, and I'm going to put my foot straight up your ass. Rusev, I need your support. Rusev, crush. I'm kidding. I like Rusev. On to the story, Teddy. Teddy, I fucked up my shoulder trying to train too heavy, and it was a bunch of wear and tear and some bullshit. Ended up tearing the infraspinatus and the supraspinatus. So the preoperative diagnosis when I went in to see Dr. Neil Ellertrash was rotator cuff tear, bicep tendinosis and instability, AC joint arthrosis, and degenerative labral tear. Okay? Turns out after all the MRIs, I had a rotator cuff tear, bicep tendinosis, and instability, AC joint arthrosis, degenerative labral tear. Well, here were the procedures performed on April the 20th. Now, this goes on to be about a three-page reading, which I'm not going to get into because there's way too many scientific words. So, I had my entire rotator cuff repaired. I had my biceps tenodesis is what they call that procedure. The top of my bicep was so frayed and ragged and was barely hanging on by a thread. He had to reattach that. Then he went in and did an arthroscopic distal clavicle resection, which is a Mumford procedure for all you fucking medical nuts out there. And then he did an arthroscopic subacromial decompression, a resection of the CA ligament, subacromial bursa, and acromioplasty. And then finally, last but not least, was an arthroscopic labral debridement of the glenohumeral joint, right shoulder. And so this took about 2.5 hours. I got my stitches taken out the other day. I'll be in a sling for about another 4 weeks. I start range of motion exercises in 3 weeks, and that's just basically picking my arm up and getting the mobility back. He said because that bicep was so frayed, he was so proud of the attachment, and he tells me, he never refers it to me, to this as my injury or my arm, Teddy. He calls it my work or my repair. He goes, I don't want you to be too aggressive and mess up my repair. So I'm on my way to recovery, and that was all the bullshit that was wrong with my shoulder. And had I not thrown those punches at motherfucking Rusev, then it would have been a pretty simple procedure, but indeed it was pretty major. And Teddy, I was going to go up to Baltimore, Maryland, and interview the one and only Shane McMahon on the Stone Cold podcast. But due to the fact, to the extensive nature of this shoulder injury, it's one thing for me to show up and whoop somebody's ass at WrestleMania because that was a once-in-a-lifetime thing, probably the last-of-a-lifetime thing at 32. That's why you were there. But I'm not going to be walking through airports and shit like that, bump into a bunch of motherfuckers and fuck up all this work. So I'm hanging here at the house. People have been sending me emails, been asking me on Twitter, hey, Steve, what the fuck? Mick Foley's going to interview Shane McMahon. How come you are not? And that's the reason why. I'll answer that question. And, man, no, there's no heat between me and WWE. There's no heat between me and Mick Foley. I wish Mick Foley all the luck in the world. He's one of my best friends. So hopefully they'll have a great conversation on 5/23 when Mick Foley hosts the tell-all conversation with Shane McMahon. So that's what's going on with that. Teddy, you still there?
Yes, sir.
Did I lose you anywhere with that shoulder surgery?
No, dude. I've followed every single word of it.
So basically you know exactly what he did.
Oh, yeah. No, dude, I don't have the slightest idea of that shit. Sounds painful, and it sounded expensive.
Dude. Hey, man, here's the thing. All I know is I got 5 holes drilled in my shoulder, and when he right. goes about the process, man, that's the one thing I forgot to ask him when I was talking to him the other day, and I asked him a million questions was, but how do you drill the holes? Because I got the incisions, and it's like today, dude, I was sitting here trying to peel off one of my Band-Aids with my broken skull knife, and I started squeezing up on the bottom of the blade and actually cut my finger because this knife is so sharp. But I was just wondering, do they stick, like, you know, a scalpel edge that's maybe, you know, 2 millimeters wide, you know, with a rod attached to the back of it and just plunge it in your shoulder? Or do they make the incision and drill down? That was a question that I wanted to ask him, just how they make the fucking holes to put the instruments in there, the one with the camera and the one with the hook and loop device that they're able to sew all this shit together arthroscopically. You got any idea?
Well, I can tell you how they do it when you get a vasectomy. I can tell you about that.
Tell me about what happened when you got your balls clipped, Teddy. How does that go down? Were you awake during the procedure? Do they twilight you or what?
No, dude, nothing. They numb you up. You know, they give you some injections in your nuts.
They put your nuts to sleep.
Yeah, put your nuts to sleep. You know, that kind of catches your attention at first. But no, they've got a pair. Man, how do you describe this? They're like scissors. Imagine scissors that your thumb and your finger go through, about 6 inches long. And on the end is 2 big loops. I say big, you know, maybe about size of a pencil eraser. And you can use those as like a clamp. Well, those things on the end are super sharp. So they take your sack and they push the end of those, of that little clamp gizmo against it and use the end, which is sharp, and they slice into your nut sack and then squeeze those finger deals together and it opens up the little hole and it keeps it open.
So, dude, you're awake during the whole time?
Oh yeah, dude. They throw a little towel up over your chest, and your junk is out there, you know, and for everybody to see. And you got the doctor and his assistant in there. No, dude, we were actually talking about deer hunting while he was doing it. You know, and so they imagine poking a hole in your nutsack and then spreading it open with this little tool, and it stays open. And then they reach in there and grab the vase, which, you know, I guess is the tube. Grab that thing, pull it out of that little hole, and he cuts it in half, and then takes a little soldering iron gizmo, or, you know, like a little creme brulee torch or whatever, and, you know, fries the end of it, and you see a little puff of smoke, and then boop, back into your sack they go.
So the dude's basically got a branding iron in your nuts to cauterize that fucking gimmick art, the gimmick vein that carries the fucking semen / sperm, cum, jism, whatever it is. That's the stuff that causes the baby. So you still get the fluid, but you just don't get the semen, correct?
Yeah, no, it's
unleaded. Because, dude, I've been hearing stories. A couple cats have been going there and getting vasectomies, but then all of a sudden something goes wrong or somebody didn't snip nothing right, and it still gets somebody pregnant. Now, that would be a fucking nightmare if all of a sudden you go in for a vasectomy, and then all of a sudden somebody gets knocked up, and it's on you.
Oh, dude, that would be an absolute nightmare. It'd be an absolute nightmare. That's why I told him, I said, hey, dude, don't cut any corners, you know, make sure you cut out plenty because we ain't going to sew these back together, you know, don't worry about it. Teddy, let me ask you a question,
personal question.
Yes, sir.
I've been fortunate because my best friend in San Antonio is Jimmy Barris. He's my doctor. And so when I got my neck cut on, you know, he turned me on to Youngblood, who a lot of other WWE superstars went to, so he's the best of the best. And when I got my left shoulder cut on, he turned me on to Steven Burkhart in San Antonio, who's friends with Neil Elitrash, who just did my right shoulder, and he's the best of the best, as is Burkhart, and the same with my knee when Elitrash put my ligaments in. So my question to you is, and I'm not bragging about the surgeons that I've been able to have work on me. I'm very thankful that because of my connections that I've been able to have premier people work on my body parts. So, Teddy, as much as a man can value his balls, do you do your research when you go get a vasectomy, or just hey, man, there's the yellow pages. Let me try Jimmy Jack, whatever his name is, and he's got 2 years experience, or do you look for some bitch who's been around the horn and knows what the fuck he's doing, because you don't want someone to go in there and cut your fucking balls off.
No, dude, actually, a guy that I played softball with, his wife worked for this urologist, Dr. Katz, there in Scottsdale, and she was like, you know, he can do it for you, just, you know, make the phone call. So that was kind of the recommendation that I went through. I didn't do any research or anything. You know, it's just Doug's wife worked there. So I made a phone call, made an appointment, and away we went. And as luck would have it, she was, you know, his assistant during the operation.
Of
so
course.
That's a little awkward. You know, that's a little awkward. Yeah.
So you weren't under twilight anesthesia start coming on to her, no pun intended.
No.
You?
No, dude, but I mean, imagine the doctor sitting there with my nuts in his hand. She's sitting there covering her eyes going, Jesus Christ, this is Teddy, you know, and the doctor's going, so you and Doug go deer hunting together. Didn't you guys, you know, go bow hunting up, you know, on the South Rim? It's like, yeah, you know, but we didn't do any good, blah, blah. We're carrying on this conversation, and she's sitting there going, you know, I cannot believe this. Yeah, you know, but I got no shame, shit.
So everything turned all right. Ted, currently you don't have any children run around out there that you don't know about?
No, sir. No.
Okay. Well, shit, Teddy, now that we're done talking about my surgery and your nuts, let's take a commercial break real quick here for the sponsors to keep the show on the air for free. That's the way I'm able to deliver two cans of Audio Whoop Ass, if that's what you want to call this. Discussing Ted's vasectomy. We're going to come back and we're going to break down The Revenant. I thought it was a hell of a goddamn movie, but we're going to get into the nuts and bolts and the whole storytelling process right after we take a break. I'm talking to my buddy Ted Fowler, 361 Ted Fowler Construction down in Rockport, Texas. We're coming right back after a quick commercial break. All right, got to give a shout-out to my longtime friend and sponsor, Diamond Dallas Page and DDP Yoga. If you're looking to change your life, get on the path to healthier living, then get yourself on the DDP Yoga program. And right now, Dallas is giving all you guys a great deal if you go to ddpyoga.com/Austin. You get the best price on DDP Yoga, and you get 3 free months of the DDP Yoga Now app. It's available for iPhones and Android, and this app
is done right. This app is money, and you can get all the DDP Yoga workouts right from your phone or tablet, and you can do live workouts from the DDP Yoga Performance Center. You can access recipes, cooking demonstrations, and nutrition guides, and you can motivate yourself by watching some of the incredible testimonial videos and stories, and you can do it all from your phone. DDP's got a rewards program built into the app, too. You get points for the yoga that you do, and then you can redeem those points for special rewards and DDP merchandise. Dallas is giving you everything you need to get on a path to healthier living, and he's making it as easy as possible. So get the DDP Yoga program at ddpyoga.com/Austin to take advantage of the 3 free months of the DDP Yoga Now app. Listen, it's like Dallas always says, all you got to do is commit to the program. So make that commitment now at ddpyoga.com/Austin. Are you looking to buy a used car? Then you should check out TrueCar.com and the TrueCar app. I bet you didn't know that you can use TrueCar to help you buy a used car, too. It ain't just for new car purchases. There are over 500,000 pre-owned vehicles available from TrueCar certified dealers nationwide, and there are over 11,000 TrueCar certified dealers. And TrueCar lets you get upfront pricing information on new and used vehicle and lets you see what other people paid for the car you want so that you feel confident you're getting a fair price. With TrueCar, via their TrueCar pricing curve, you see what other people paid for the car and you lock in your guaranteed savings. Then you connect with a local certified dealer of your choosing, take them your TrueCar guaranteed savings certificate, and make your car buying experience quick and easy. Over 2 million cars have been sold to TrueCar users by the TrueCar Certified Dealer Network, and TrueCar users save an average of over $3,000 off MSRP. So when you're ready to buy a new or used car, visit TrueCar.com or download the TrueCar app to enjoy a better car buying experience. Some features not available in all states. All right, here we go, Teddy. Before we get started on this extravaganza of a movie, Teddy, let's talk about your Skype process. The other day, I was talking to a good friend of mine, Brian Bentley, who built my website, and I talked to him. I said, hey, man, is there any way you can help my friend down in Rockport, Texas, get set up with Skype? This motherfucker done tried to set it up himself on his home computer. He's got all kinds of porn on this motherfucker. It's jammed up. They tried to gouge him for $250. I had about 16 people tell me to send you a warning to go get your hard drive cleaned or something, Teddy, because they might have got into your system. What happened with Brian Bentley? Did anybody compromise your hard drive, or did you get jacked for $250 and get ripped off?
No, dude, Brian got me hooked up. Nobody jacked with my computer, but I did get a flare on Twitter to download this thing called WebRoot or something like that for $50 a year. It protects your computer. You can look at as much porn as you want. So, you know, I went ahead and bit that bullet and got it.
Of course.
No, but I talked to Brian last night, and he walked me through the process, and, you know, it took – because my internet is so painfully slow here, it took about 15 or 20 minutes to set that thing up. It was real easy. It just takes a long time for my thing to, you know, download, upload, whatever. But it's working like a champ now.
All right, dude, you got a chance to watch The Revenant twice. I watched it twice. Now, I sat there last night, and I was thinking, man, maybe I ought to write some of this shit down or remember some shit. And I said, oh, man, this is the fucking working man's review. I actually got online and read a couple of other people's reviews as well, but they get so scientific about these goddamn write-ups, it's just unbelievable. And the way I look at it, it's a goddamn movie. And it was a hell of a movie, and it was directed by Alejandro G. Iñárritu. And then let me give a shout-out to the cinematographer, because his name was Emmanuel Lubezki. Now, here's the thing. This was an unbelievable movie. Teddy, it took about 9 months to film this movie, and I believe they went 2 or 3 months over what they thought they was going to have to film. And I guess they shot a lot of this thing in Calgary and Argentina, and the conditions, as you saw in the movie, were outlandishly cold. I've done a couple of low-budget movies in the cold, and I thought it sucked ass.
And I've never worked in the cold conditions and some of the water scenes that were involved in this movie. But Leo DiCaprio, who I've already liked before as being one of the best actors out there right now, he's just a true artist at what he does. But for a cat like that to undertake a role like this, it would be interesting to talk to him, because at this point in his career, as great as an actor as he is, I got to give him a lot of respect for taking the part because of the rugged physicality of the goddamn shoot. Dude, you've been out there hunting with my brother-in-law Mitch in Sparks, Nevada, and it was cold as fuck, but you guys weren't in the water and doing all the shit that these guys were. What did you think about the movie from a cinematography standpoint? And talk to me about how you thought the filming conditions were. Even though you've never been on a movie set, this motherfucker was cold.
Oh, man, that's the first thing that comes to mind. Leo did a solid job that, like you were saying, some of those water parts, you know, where you know it's ass-reaming cold in that water. And, you know, even if he's got a wetsuit on or some type of bodysuit on underneath those clothes, you know he's still freezing his ass off. I mean, you really got to like being an actor and doing movies if you're that guy and you got a mountain of money and say, you know what? I think that'd be cool. I think that'd be a challenge to go out there and freeze my sack off for half a year, you know, and what ate that bison liver or something. And, you know, like, God damn, dude, I don't even want my food to touch, let alone, you know, throw me a slab, you know, of uncooked liver and start chewing on that, you know, do it for the film. Fuck the film.
And, you know, let's talk about the film, because this is basically, it was based on a true story, and then they spun it off into their own thing. But the character that Leo DiCaprio played was a guy named Hugh Glass, who was an actual trapper way back in the days in 1820, 1822s, give or take. And so he was, that's Mula in the background. And my yard guys are here, of course. But anyway, Hugh Glass was a trapper, and he actually got mauled by a bear, and his guys left him for dead, and then he ended up making his way back. He never really exacted his revenge, as Leo does in this movie, but I love the way this movie started off, because, well, it was a hard start, because it looked like their village, Leo was married to, I guess, a Pawnee woman, and they had a son named Hawk. And then Leo's wife, or Hugh Glass's wife, is killed in the opening scene, and he's nursing his son, who's got his a burn on his face, and he's always telling him, keep breathing, take one breath, and he's trying to nurse his son back to health. And so he's mourning for his wife, you know, jump a few years in advance, and now Hawk is now a young man, or still a boy. And they're trapping. They're trying to get these furs, and he's with a group of guys. And so they're at a camp. And you can see the bond between Hugh and Hawk, father and son. He just loves his kid. The kid loves his dad. But the kid's kind of in harm's way because he's part Indian. And a lot of the white guys on the crew, not so much. And so anyway, man, they're out there trapping, doing their thing. And I tell you what, I think that's when Hugh and Hawk and them were trying to get an elk, and all the shit starts going down. These arrows start flying in. I think it was the Arikara Indians moved in for an attack on the camp, the base camp, and it was thrilling action. Some of these fucking arrows, the way they started flying in here, were just phenomenal, and they just started killing everybody, and it turned into a hell of a fight. Here comes Hugh and Hawk. They're running back. On a technical note, well, first of all, Teddy, what did you think about the initial attack done by the Indians on the camp? Because it was physical. This movie was brutality at its finest and captured. And also, Teddy, I don't know if you knew this, but the director decided to shoot this movie with all natural light. So they were only shooting anywhere from 90 minutes to 3 hour segments of time. And that's one of the reasons the movie took so long, along with weather conditions, because there was no artificial light brought in on this movie. But talk about the initial onslaught by the Indians onto the guys that were trapping.
Oh, dude, that was a brutal attack. I mean, the first guy standing there took an arrow, what, right in the throat?
Yeah. Hello.
You know. Yeah, and then another guy took one right in the eyeball. It's like, good grief, man. I mean, I don't think there is a good way to die, but those two particular instances got to be way down on the list. Yeah, but I mean, just a brutal, savage attack. That would be a tough That would have been a tough gig if that was your line of work back in the day to do something like that. You know, you had to really have an adventuresome spirit, that's for sure.
Yeah, so anyway, it ends up, there's a hell of a fight there, man. The guys are trying to grab all their furs and stuff like that because that's how they're making their living. They got to take these pelts back down and sell them. So, you know, there's a captain who's leading the charge, and I forget the guy's name. The casting on this thing from top to bottom was premier because everybody was awesome. But, man, as we've talked about Leo being in the number one spot, Tom Hardy played the part of Fitzgerald. He was the number two guy in the movie. And, man, I tell you what, you talk about a piece of shit heel. Tom Hardy was phenomenal as his character because he was concerned about nothing but himself getting that goddamn money and getting out of Dodge. So, anyway, they've made a retreat. They're all pissed off. And Glass and Fitzgerald kind of go at it a little bit. And Hawk jumps in. And, you know, Glass tells Hawk, you know, he's got to remain silent and, you know, be unseen. He's worried about the safety of the kid. And so, anyway, they decide to go, you know, Hawk decides to go off and do a little scouting or hunting. And here's one of my favorite scenes in the movie here, Teddy. And there's another one, too, I'll bring up. But this is when Glass is out looking around, scouting, maybe trying to shoot something to eat. They're tired of eating beaver meat, and they just got run off from their camp. And he comes across two baby cubs. Well, right behind him was the mama bear. And boy, I tell you what, that's one of the most dangerous things. I've never been out in the wild and come across bears. But when you get a mama cub, and bears are usually pretty cool. But if you got a mama cub, if you got a mama bear and trying to protect her cubs, mister, you are going to get your ass whooped. And that fight scene, well, I'm not even going to call it a fight scene. It was a mall scene. And that mama bear ripped fucking Glass from eyeball to asshole. She shredded his ass. And then she goes off to go tend to her cubs. And then there goes Glass. He tries to reach for that musket. And he kind of is in a position to shoot. And I guess the commotion kind of drew her back to him. And she goes back to open up another set of heat on him. And in the process, he's able to catch her in the shoulder. And then, God damn it, they start fighting again. And she's just whooping this motherfucker's ass. It was almost hard to watch. And I love violence. And I love movies like this. But that mauling was so severe, it was unparalleled. And then finally, Glass is able to draw that knife out. Draws the knife out. Ends up tumbling down about a 10 or 15 foot slope. And I'll be goddamn, Mama Bear starts selling. She's bleeding out. Tumbles down the same slope and falls right on top of Glass. We got a double down. Where's the referee to count to 10? Dude, what do you think about that fight scene? That was fucking... I guess that's the best of CGI, whatever the fuck you call it, but God damn it, it was awesome.
Oh, dude, when that grizzly, you know, he's laying on his stomach and she jumps up on his back with her front feet and starts, you know, pushing on him, you know, to see if he's going to move, gets her face right up next to his face, you know, because he's you know, playing dead because he's damn near dead anyway, you know. And, man, she just starts working his ass over. It's like, God, you talk about, you know, next to an arrow in the eyeball, that would be, you know, the worst way to go, to be torn apart by that mama bear. And those things are 1,000 pounds, man, big.
Oh, man, that thing was weighed better than 1,000 pounds, and pro wrestling weight had been 2,500. But, man, and, you know, he was getting his ass kicked by the bear, and when she did that swipe and basically almost cut his jugular and impaired his throat and kind of got his trachea, I guess, because he couldn't talk worth a fuck after that, but the look on his face, and that was one of the things that, you know, people talk about. Leo didn't have a whole lot of dialogue in the movie. He would a little bit on the back end in certain parts, but especially after that throat swipe. But what he did so well was sell pain. And this goes back to, you know, the pro wrestling people. I mean, if you don't sell pain, nobody cares. But, you know, you'd already established the bond between him and Hawk. He knew as a father, he cared about his son. He lost his wife. And just so you cared about him as a person. And now because he's selling this attack so well, And it's just it was just an unbelievable job of acting, because selling pain for camera is different than selling pain, I think, in real life or even in a ring, because it's just a different process. And then later on in the movie, any time that he would emerge from the water when the Indians had almost tracked him down, because the whole movie in part was about the Indians who were looking for their daughter got hijacked or kidnapped by the French guys, Pouaqua, and so they were in pursuit of whoever had kidnapped Pouaqua, and I think that's what led to all the attacks. And so now they're on Glass's trail. They think, you know, maybe he's part of it. And man, he's in that riverbank, and he had got himself underneath that little cave and built a fire. And then all of a sudden he goes in the water, he goes down through the falls, and then finally ends up grabbing hold of a floating log and ends up on the bank. So he got away from the Indians on that account. But as soon as he comes to the bank, he's smart enough, because you're looking at this ride down the water, and I'm thinking, because I've been in the outdoors, I'm thinking, okay, hypothermia. You know, that's got to set in. And sure enough, he goes to stripping off that jacket. But he immediately puts his hands to his mouth, and he's trying to use his breath to warm his hands. And so, you know, at all points during the movie, and when he was climbing out of that damn grave that Fitzgerald is about to throw him in, and we'll get to that. But going back just to the selling of the pain, the acting that DiCaprio does, it's nonverbal. But it was so harsh and so brutal. I just thought, man, he always took me back to, it's a total shoot. This is total brutality. And for a shoot, it was really cold. But sometimes you just forget to do the finer things in a moment like that, because you're freezing your fucking ass off, and he pulled it off to perfection.
Oh, I agree with you. And you're spot on where he blew on his hands. Is that something we've all done? You know, we've all been that cold, and that's just the first thing you think of. You know, no, the guy's a quality actor. He's very good at what he does, that's for sure.
Dude, what'd you think when he was underneath the bank, and here comes the Indians, and goddamn, sure enough, those guys can track like nobody's business, because that's what they do. And they start seeing him there, and he's scratching on the rocks. He's trying to say, you know, he just, every time he gets a chance to write, Fitzgerald killed my son, he is. And then he gets back down in that water, and then you see him heading downstream, and he's like, oh, man, this dude literally is up a creek without a paddle. And then the fucking arrows start whizzing by him. And so here's part of the thing, and I'm going to make this point right here, and I'll carry it through to the rest of the podcast. So what's happened is he's lost his wife, and then so there's a little bit of heat there, okay? And now this fucking grizzly bear mauls him to goddamn near death. Luckily, after that bear fell upon him, his guys heard him screaming, and luckily enough, they were able to find him in the woods. The main guy, I forgot his name, the red-haired guy who was playing the captain, stitched up his throat as best he could. It was very gory. So he's lost his son. The bear beat the fuck out of him, and now they've got him. They get him kind of taken care of a little bit. They put him on a gurney, and they're going to try to carry him, you know, all the way back to the camp. And he's the one that knows the way back to camp. But now he can't talk because his throat has basically been gashed. And Fitzgerald just wants to get the fuck out of Dodge. And when Glass is yelling, he's just worried about Glass attracting the other Indians to come in for another attack. So you've got heat on Glass from losing his son. Now the bear's kicked his ass. And now they can't get him up the icy slope, so they're going to leave him behind. And they leave him behind with Bridger, Hawk, and Fitzgerald. And the captain tells him, now you guys stay with him, and when and if he dies, give him a proper burial, and then meet us back at camp. Well, as soon as everybody leaves, Fitzgerald is in his ear. Listen, all you got to do is give me the blink, and I'll end it for you. So this piece of shit just wants to get back to camp. He's willing to off Glass if he just blinks and gives him the high sign. And Glass is a survivor. So what did you think? There was a long blink, but I thought that was just Leo blinking there, and that wasn't him giving Fitzgerald a sign. What did you make out of that, Teddy?
Yeah, I don't think he was. I don't think he was giving him the sign saying, "Hey, dude, go ahead and put me out of my misery." You know, it's
because he held his eyes open for like 30 seconds.
Yeah, for so long. Yeah. It's like, dude, all you got to do is take a breath, and that'll be the sign that, you know, you want me to kill you. It's like, well, shit. Sooner or later, you got to take a breath. Yeah, no, I think by him holding his eyes closed as long as he did, he was just recouping from keeping them open that long. Yeah, no, Fitzgerald was just, he was looking out for himself.
He was a piece of shit, so he stuffs a rag in his mouth, and he goes to snuff him out. So Hawk, seeing Fitzgerald trying to snuff out his dad, attacks Fitzgerald and gets him off. And, of course, you know, he throws the kid off because Fitzgerald's bigger, stronger. And Bridger is down there filling his canteen in the river, can't hear shit. So Hawk's yelling for Bridger and saying, "Are you going to be court-martialed? You're going to be court-martialed," and yelling for him. So Fitzgerald, being the low-life motherfucker that he is, takes out his knife and just guts the kid. Stabs him 3 or 4 times in the drum. And Glass is forced to watch while he's tied down to his gurney because Fitzgerald cinched him up, and watches the man kill his son. The only thing he had was his son, and he has to watch him die. And so some people who were talking about the movie said, you know, it was just Glass going to avenge the guys who left him. No. It was about avenging not just the guys that left him, but first and foremost, Fitzgerald, who killed his son. And that's why, you know, he was hell set on vengeance. What did you think about Fitzgerald snuffing out Hawk? Because, see, I grew to like Hawk because of how close he was with his dad, Glass.
Oh, absolutely. But, I mean, Fitzgerald is already, you know, willied out about the Indians coming and getting them, you know, and rightly so. I mean, it was just a matter of time before they caught up with him. You know, Hawk's sticking up for his dad, and he's not going to let anything happen. And I think Fitzgerald, you know, I'm surprised he didn't just go ahead and kill Glass right after he knifed Hawk and just, you know, run for the hills, get the hell out of there.
I thought so, too, and that was one of the things that threw me. So because he, as despicable as he was, he didn't. And then Bridger comes back and asks what's up, and, of course, he drug Hawk's body off. I mean, he only drug him 15 yards away, so why Bridger didn't see him, I don't know. And then the next, I guess it's the next morning, he wakes the kid up, wakes Bridger up and says, "Hey, man, the Indians are down by the creek. We got to haul ass." And he says, "Well, what about Glass? We can't just leave him here." And he goes, "We got to leave him here." And so then, you know, Fitzgerald, being the piece of shit that he is, drags him into the grave, and he's going to give him a proper burial and just starts throwing dirt over him. Well, he's not dead yet, but he's just going through the motions to make Bridger somewhat happy. Of course, right. Glass is horrified and probably on a 1 to 10 pain, a 13. And so, you know, Bridger doesn't know where to shit or wind his watch. Fitzgerald is in his head. He's kind of got that psychotic charisma, or just, he just makes the kid believe. And so they got to go haul ass, and they can't do anything for Glass. And so at the very least, there's the scene earlier in the movie where Fitzgerald got on to Bridger for making noise. Well, he was carving that little snail sign onto that canteen, and he left that back for Glass to have some water as he laid in that grave. And, of course, this would be a telltale sign later when one of the French guys was brought to the camp and they saw that canteen and they figured maybe Hawk was still alive, but no, it was indeed Glass. So at that point, as he's laying in the grave and Bridger and Fitzgerald leave, well, Glass knows that he's got to get the fuck out of Dodge. So he crawls over to his boy. He sees his boy. He's there with him. I guess he probably sleeps there overnight, hugging him. And then, literally, dude, that guy crawls. He crawls for I don't know how many miles until he's able to walk. His right leg is badly mangled. Dude, when you've been in the woods, crawling sucks. We've all crawled a little bit. You crawl for 50, 100 yards, that's a long way. And reading about the real Hugh Glass, I think, you know, depending on which story you read, he crawled upwards of 50 to 200, 300 miles. But dude crawls his way, and he crawls to that little bluff, and he's looking down and seeing where he's got to go. And so the dude's hungry as fuck, and he's such a survivor, and that's what I liked about him. That at that one point, it might have been before the Indians run him off the first time, but when he came off that out of that river, he had built himself that little corral out of rocks.
Yeah.
And those fish had pulled up in there, and so that's when he was able to grab one of the fish and eat it, because you've never it's always, you know, you're thinking, okay, when is this guy going to get a chance to eat? At one time, he crawled up to that carcass, and he's trying to get bone marrow or something out of there. So he was smart enough and had the wherewithal, and he's a survivor, to make the corral, eat the fish, and then kind of just fast forward, he sees the buffalo. Here's the buffalo, and the wolves get a buffalo down and they kill him. They kill a buffalo and they're going to eat him. And so that night he sees the flames and the fires going on, and it turns out that there was, I guess, a Pawnee Indian had built the fires, run off the wolves, and he was eating on the buffalo. And Glass crawls up or walks up to him, puts his hands up in the air, and crawls over. And the Indian throws him a piece of meat, of some liver, for Glass to eat. And so, you know, in the morning after spending the night by the fire, just basically laying in two separate spots, the two kind of form a team, a bond, you know, because he says that his men left him for dead. And I guess they killed his son. And the Indian guy had lost someone too, so the Indian guy takes Glass under his wing and basically saves his life. He patches him up, heals his wounds. And then that one time right before, you know, the Indian was going to meet his demise, the snowstorm hit. And all of a sudden, man, he knows he's going to, because Glass is rotting, he's going to try to put some medicine on his back to heal his wounds. And the shit goes down. There's a big storm. And he builds this structure, basically a tent, and puts that buffalo hide that Glass is wearing on top of it, and he's going to ride on and continue his mission. Well, he left behind two hocks of meat for Glass, and Glass comes out of the tent and gets all of his shit together. Dude, he didn't go 200 yards, and there's the Indian hung up in a tree by the French guys, the French trappers, who indeed have Paula Quay, the daughter of Toussaint, who's looking for.
Did they ever show the girl?
Yeah.
I don't remember seeing her.
Yeah. Well, see, the French guys had her, and so Leo comes upon him in daytime, and he knows that these guys are bad news. So he stays there behind a tree until dusk, and then when nighttime comes, and they're kind of, you know, they're getting drunk there by the fire, he's going to sneak in and steal a horse. Well, one of the guys says, "Bring me the girl." And so
that's
the scene where he's got her up against the tree. And that's the scene when Leo Glass comes in, picks up the musket or the pistol off the ground that the soldier or the trapper had, puts it against the back of his head. And since he speaks Indian, you know, he tells the girl, you know, "Get a horse," or, you know, "Hand me the knife." And so now the girl, Poquay, I guess, basically has a knife at his balls. And she says, "I'll cut your balls off." And that's when Glass goes to get a horse, and he has, I think, all intentions of, you know, rescuing the girl and taking her with him. But then here comes all the other guys, shots are fired, and that's when she runs in an opposite direction. So he just jumps on his horse and hauls ass. But indeed, she makes her getaway, and then he goes off and the chase is on. So that's where the girl was. Did you miss that?
You know what, now that you remind me, you know, I do remember that part. You know what? I watched it in two parts. You know, one part one night, and I think that was right around where I broke it off.
Okay, so ends up, you know, he's still on the trail. Try to get back to base camp. So anyway, I think you know, a couple of times on their way back on the other storyline, Bridger and Fitzgerald, you know, make it back to the camp. And of course, Fitzgerald tells Bridger, "Hey man, here's a story, let's stick to it." And they go to see the captain, they get paid, and Bridger goes out, and, you know, he feels guilty. He knows that he didn't do the right thing. And then about a day later, here comes the dude who was part of the French gang, I guess. And he has the canteen that Bridger indeed carved on. So they think Hawk's alive. They send out the search party that night. And that's when they come upon Glass, who's just walking in. And he's really been through the ringer. And as soon as the word is out, the hunt goes on for Fitzgerald. And so they bring Leo back, Glass, back to camp. The doctor tends to his wounds. They talk to him. They find out the story of what's going on. You know, Fitzgerald indeed murdered his son, and that's when the hunt for Fitzgerald is on. All right, now, Teddy, the captain and the captain tries to talk Glass into not going. But Glass says, hell no, I'm going to go. And so they split up. And I'll be damned if the captain doesn't get killed by Fitzgerald. Now, here's the thing. Again, they've gotten all this heat on Glass the entire time. He's been in cell mode. Things keep going up against him. And so what I'm looking for in the finish of this movie is a big finish. I want Glass to totally annihilate, destroy, and behead Fitzgerald because he needs to make his comeback. They're giving him the go-home cue, and it's time to end this movie and ride off into the sunset with a big finish. So they ride out. Of course, Fitzgerald gets a drop on the captain, kills him, and then Fitzgerald runs off. Glass comes after him, and in a foolish move, you know, Glass is making his approach on Fitzgerald. Fitzgerald shoots and misses Leo, Glass. And I thought Glass would have been smarter than this. He's shooting the muzzle loader. It's got one shot. And he takes a shot at the trees. Well, when Fitzgerald shot first, all he had to do was chase after him and track him down rather than taking the risky shot through the hardwood trees because you got no chance of hitting him. So you would have approached him with a bullet in the chamber. And instead, he shoots and misses and the chase is on. So he finally meets up with him. And they're walking slowly, and he sneaks up because he puts the captain on the horse, props him up with a stick, real smart. Fitzgerald shoots the captain, and that's when the chase ensues, and that's finally when they kind of end up in that slow motion last sequence, the fight sequence. And because both guys had been through so much, and Glass is damn near death, and Fitzgerald has been shot in the shoulder, you know, the fight scene was brutal, it was authentic, and it was real, and, you know, I love the hatchet chopping off the fingers. Fitzgerald sticks that goddamn knife in Glass's thigh, and then Glass gets the knife, and is, you know, there's one more hatchet swing, and then Fitzgerald is the heel that you just can't fucking kill. That's how tough he is, this mean, no-good motherfucker. And you want Glass to kick his ass. And then Glass gets stabbed in the hand by Fitzgerald, where he pulls the knife out, ends up sticking it in Fitzgerald's hamstring. And then, right before he's fixing to end him, he sees Toussaint, I guess, and his Palaquay, and it's the Indian tribe. And as the Indian that befriended him said, revenge is in God's hands. So he decides to float Fitzgerald down the river, and Toussaint gets Fitzgerald and carves him up like a pig. And so that's the demise of Fitzgerald. And then they ride by Glass, and there was never any acknowledgement of that Poquet says, hey, Dad, this has got to save me, or how did they know they were at such far range? How was their facial recognition? Poquet gives him a long glance, but there's never any acknowledgement. And there was Glass, you know, just kind of staring, and he just kind of looks up into space, and then the movie's over. So my deal was, I love this movie. It was brutal. I know those kind of conditions are hard to shoot in. The cinematography was great. The direction was great. Leo was great. Tom Hardy was great. I invested so much care in Glass's character that the fact that he didn't get a more violent revenge really drop my rating for the movie because I wanted a bigger payoff. What were your thoughts in regards to the payoff or the revenge factor? Because, you know, he told the captain he's afraid. He knows I come all this way for him. I'm not going to stop till I get to him.
You know what? You're absolutely right. If it was me being Leo, I wouldn't have taken that shot through the trees because he's used up his round. He's running. He's not going to be able to reload. I'd have run him down and I'd have shot him right in the kneecap. And then I'd have gone to work with the knife and whittled him up, you know, and really exact. I mean, he lost his wife. Granted, that wasn't Fitzgerald's doing, but, you know, Leo's had a belly full. You know, Fitzgerald killed his kid. He's got, you know, he's just burning up with, you know, the want to kill this guy. And it kind of, you know, peters out like that. Now, when he chopped his fingers off, that was pretty funny, you know, because that's the kind of shit that you want to see happen. I just thought he should have tortured him a little bit more.
I thought he should have tortured him a little bit more. And then going back to another one of my favorite scenes, I'd be remiss to say that when he was on the creek bank and his throat was so bad that when he drank water, you know, water would come out of it, he knew he had to cauterize that wound. And so being the survivor that he is, got the gunpowder from his charge, or, you know, where they keep the gunpowder and the balls and stuff like that, but puts gunpowder in the wound, and he makes himself a fire, makes himself a little torch, and then lights that gunpowder on his throat to cauterize those wounds. And it's like, first of all, super painful, but also imperative as far as, dude, I mean, he was beat to shreds. He knew he had to close that wound, and that was how he did it. And, of course, he immediately passes out. And then, so that was another great survival technique. But one of the other great scenes in the movie was he's sleeping. He had already made the one getaway. He had just stolen the horse from the French guys. He had saved Poliquet. She had went her way. And so then the Indians come upon him, and they jump him, and he's able to get away from them. He shoots one who's making a close. He's got a good cutoff angle on him like someone running down a sideline, and he shoots him off the horse. And I'll be damned, this one caught me right out of the blue. They ride right off the edge of a cliff. And almost like Rambo, when Stallone jumps from the helicopter or whatever it was onto the tree and goes tumbling down, they ride, him and that horse ride right off a cliff. The horse falls to its demise down, you know, 200 feet below, and he flies into the tree and is able to kind of just make a landing into the snow. He's been so fucking beat up that this time, at least, you know, he didn't get any broken bones because it was an incredible stunt. And, you know, and one thing I was happy about, as much heat and as much as physical damage that they did to him, at least he always had his jaws and his teeth to eat. Because his leg was fucking mangled, his back, his throat was slit. I mean, what the fuck else could you do to the guy? But at least he could eat. And so then, and I saw this one coming, he's got the wherewithal because the cold's coming in, and he guts the horse, pulls out all the guts, climbs in, and is able to get some rest. And when he climbed inside the carcass of that horse, and he stuck his face out, you know, so he could breathe. But just the look on his face when he was doing that, again, when you're selling pain and what he'd just been through, and then you gut the horse and you get in the warm carcass for your warmth, another survival mechanism, dude, that was a badass scene.
Yeah, that was a trip. I mean, those guys were survivalist, you know, par excellence. I mean, man, can you imagine doing that, though? Really? Disemboweling that animal and then climbing inside it as an attempt to stay alive. Holy cow.
Dude, I did that one time to a possum at the Broken Skull Ranch. I had the guts.
Must have been a big ass possum.
No, I was just going to say, made a hell of a foot warmer. Anyway, Teddy, how you want to rate this movie? You want to do this on a 5-star scale, 10-star scale? What do you want to call it? Or A plus, B minus, or A through D? How you want to rate this thing?
You know what? I'd go 4 out of 5 stars. I mean, now that I know that, you know, how long it took And it makes sense, you know, because if they're filming during winter, winter ain't going to last all year long. So they had to go from one location to the other. Okay, now I get that. I did not realize that the director was using all natural light, which is cool. You know, I mean, I dig that. So I like the movie even more. You know, I'd go 4 out of 5 stars.
Yeah, I think I'll go 4 out of 5 stars too. What this movie also reminded me a little bit of, just because one man in the elements, basically for the most part, was Jeremiah Johnson with Robert Redford. Whole different set of circumstances, but a couple of parallels. The reason I like Jeremiah Johnson so good was because, you know, after, you know, he was leading soldiers down to a group of settlers who had gotten in harm's way. Their wagons had busted down, and they had to cut through an Indian burial ground, which is sacred, and you don't go through there. And he recommended going around. It was going to take an extra 2 days. And that captain said, no, we got to go through. Those people are starving down there. They need our help. So anyway, they go through there, and then, of course, that pisses the Indians off, and they exact revenge by killing Robert Redford's wife and son, and adopted son that the crazy woman had given to him. And they had just turned into a happy unit, and so they just kept sending warriors after him one by one by one. And so you always had those thrilling short fight sequences, which were high intensity, and Robert Redford did such a great job in that role. But I guess finally at the end, that one Indian gave him the high sign and said it was over. And then that's when Robert Redford reached his hand out, and it was an acknowledgement, hey, okay, we've had enough. Let's call it fucking even. We're done. And so that I enjoyed the finish to Jeremiah Johnson more, just because of the payoff and the ending, and it was over. And so I give Revenant 4 out of 5 stars, because it was a hell of a movie. It was shot so well. Some of the sequences were just off the charts, and the acting across the board, especially in the 1 and 2 spots by DiCaprio, just in some of the solo scenes with all of the pain and all of the shit they did. And Tom Hardy was so awesome as being a low-life scum, but that accent, dude, the first time I watched the movie, I almost had to put it on closed caption so I could read what they were saying, because I didn't know where these fucking guys were from. They were on the Missouri River, allegedly. And maybe North South Dakota or something like that. But I didn't pick up where the accent was from, but it was so countrified, it was hard for me to understand. But, man, as an actor, to pull that kind of accent off, and fuck, that dude's from England. And for DiCaprio to speak that Indian language that he was speaking early on to his son, it was very impressive. So I recommend the movie from a personal standpoint. I wanted, and to a parallel, a wrestling storyline, I wanted the payoff to be bigger, just because I was so invested in Glass's character due to DiCaprio's performance. I wanted the payback to be bigger, and that's that.
Yeah. Fitzgerald was a piece of shit. He needed to die a more painful death, but you know, it is what it is.
The second time, you know, because, you know, I've been talking to a few people about it, you know, and did Toussaint did carve him up pretty good down the river, but you know, it was one of those things I wanted to see more than hear. And like you said, hey, if it had shot him in the kneecap and then maybe shot him in the arm, I would have taken my time, because when Fitzgerald gutted Hawk like a cocksucker and killed the kid, and fucking Glasses just got to lay there and watch that.
Yeah.
I just wanted that motherfucker to get a payback and just piecemeal that motherfucker and make him suffer. But then that's just me.
In a good Christian way.
Well, all right, Teddy, that's our wrap-up of The Revenant. I appreciate the time on the podcast, and I'll be seeing you soon.
All right, man. Sounds good. Thanks for having me on.
Good luck with work. All right, everybody, give me the go-home cue. It's time to wrap up this podcast and ride off in the sunset. But before I do, let me give you something to watch. Go watch The Revenant. It's a badass movie starring Leo DiCaprio. It's a tough-ass, gritty movie of a man out there. He's a survivor trying to avenge the loss of his son and the men who left him for dead. And it was a well-acted movie. Leo was off the fucking charts. Nailed it with a tough, gritty performance.
Tom Hardy as Fitzgerald, off the charts, badass. What a piece of shit heel this guy was. A great movie. I highly recommend it. 4 out of 5 stars. The only reason I didn't give it 5 out of 5 stars because I wanted Leo to beat the flying shit out of Tom Hardy, their characters, at the end of that movie for killing his son, Hawk. I was really emotionally invested in his character. Great action sequences, shooting with all natural light. The cast and crew get a swig of beer for this one because it was a tough movie to make. And if you've already seen The Revenant and you've never seen Jeremiah Johnson, then I recommend you see Jeremiah Johnson as well because it's a whole different movie. But with all the badass attacks and fight scenes and Redford's performance in this movie and the story, I recommend that one for you as well. It's one of my favorite movies of all time. Hey, gang. All my T-shirt designs and all the bullshit I was wearing on Broken Skull Challenge and Redneck Island, they available at BrokenSkullRanch.com and ProWrestlingTees.com/Steve Austin. And Broken Skull IPA is available at El Segundo Brewing Company, 140 Main Street. Go over there, pick you up a pint, and tell them Austin sent you. If you're in California, you can find it at Whole Foods, Total Wines. And if you're outside California, you call InsideTheCellar.com, and they'll ship it right to your front door. And don't forget about the Steve Austin Broken Skull Knife from Cold Steel Knives. Strongest, sharpest knives in the world. All this shit's available at BrokenSkullRanch.com. If you want something, Steve Austin, go to BrokenSkullRanch.com, and you can find what you need. Hey, man, I want to say thanks for Ted Fowler for joining me today's podcast. Thank you to Brian Bentley for hooking his ass up on Skype and not charging him $250 goddamn. And I want to thank y'all's ass for supporting the goddamn podcast. If it wasn't for you guys, I would not be doing this 2 times a week free. So thank you to you guys, and big ups to the sponsors who make this possible. DDPYoga.com/Austin and the DDP Yoga Now app. To Onnit, go to Onnit.com/Steve to save 10% off your order. To TrueCar, and also thank you to Amazon. They've been with us since day one. I got Amazon links for USA, UK, and Canada. If you use my Amazon link, Amazon kicks back a couple of bucks to the podcast. That's how we pay our production cost. All you got to do to help a brother out, I ain't asking for your money. This ain't a handout. Go to podcastone.com, click the Killer Deals button in the top right corner, then click on the Steve Austin Show. That's where you find all my sponsors, all my Amazon links, and that's how you can help support the show, help keep this show on the air for free. If you bookmark the sumbitch, it'll make it a hell of a lot easier for you to support the show. Hey, man, keep listening, folks. The 60-second AP News headlines are coming up next. Until then, my name is Steve motherfucking Austin, and I will catch your ass down the road.
Download new episodes of Steve Austin Unleashed every Thursday at PodcastOne.com. That's PodcastOne.com.